Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude as we continue our coverage for the greatest movie franchise of all time. This week we are checking in on Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and returning to the cave is everybody's favorite host, and she was recently voted from Podcast Magazine as the prettiest podcast host on the webs. Stand and state your name. Where are you from?
Daphne J. That was so weird. Why did you?
You weren't expecting that,
no.
Right? Just trying to flatter you a little bit before we get started. How's it going, Daph J? Welcome back to the cave.
It's good.
You doing well?
Yeah, I'm reading. I've been reading.
You've been reading.
Good for me.
Round of applause. Why is that such an accomplishment for you to right away say, I've been reading?
Because I don't do that.
Are you excited to be talking about Star Wars Empire Strikes Back, this special highlight-focused episode?
I am, because I guess less than a week from now, the new one's coming out. You have food on your forehead.
How is that even possible?
I don't know. It's not in your hair.
Okay. We'll edit this out and let's get it out of my head.
It's right there now.
Okay, we got it.
Is it food?
I don't know what it is. Yeah, it's probably some type of crumbs. I'm always cleaning around here, cleaning up after you. So you're excited for Force Awakens?
Yes.
And you're revving yourself up by watching all of the originals?
Yeah. And there's an exhibit right now that's happening in Toronto on Queen Street. Okay. What they're doing, I don't think it's a huge thing, but I think for anyone who appreciates Star Wars, they have an exhibit with all the costumes, and the guy that actually played C-3PO
His name's Anthony Daniels?
He's actually there. I saw him interviewed yesterday. So that's happening. So it's a big hype right now.
Are you falling back in love with the films? Because you've always liked them.
Yeah.
You've always been a fan of especially the originals. Not
I
so
think
much
I'm just,
the prequels, but
falling in love with it again. I guess appreciating them all over again because the hype right now. So I think it's natural for anyone to just want to go back and revisit the history of everything, right?
Yeah.
So it's exciting, yeah.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to talking about it with you. I had a really good time with our wild card talking about A New Hope. So I'm looking forward to seeing how you weigh in on Empire Strikes Back.
Was a good episode, by the way.
Did you like it?
Mm-hmm.
The soothing tones of our wild card's voice just put you into a relaxing state. he's a good guest host. I enjoy having him with us. But before we get into talking about Empire Strikes Back, which I'm sure we have a lot to say about it, you said you were reading.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me what you've been reading, if you recommend it. Give us your take.
Well, I remember a podcast, I believe, that you had with our wild card, and he had said that he read Hawkeye.
Okay.
And so there was a while there that I was thinking of reading it.
Which Hawkeye is it that you're referring to? Is it the one that our wild card read?
Yes.
Okay, who... Is it the Fraction, Matt Fraction and David Aja?
Yes, it's the purple one with all the bullseyes all around it.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
And how did you find it? What made you want to read it? Was it from our wild card talking about it?
Well, I wanted to try something different.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, I think, is familiar with the fact that I read Batman. But, I don't know, I like the cover. I like purple, and so I thought it...
Judge a book by its cover, and you like purple. What a girl.
And you know what? This might sound a little stupid, but I liked how you both appreciated the series of when a story is told from a dog's perspective.
Yeah.
And I'm like, huh, that has to be interesting. So I've read it. I like the story. I was hesitant at first because I thought it was big. And I'm like, this is not... I'm going to just not read it.
Feel lost, perhaps?
And when I opened it at first, I almost got deterred by the art.
How come? What was it?
It just looked... I don't know. I think my eye appeals to crisp images, clean lines. And I found this to be a little not that. There wasn't as much definition. There's a lot of shadows.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even see their eyes, mm-hmm. kind of sometimes, you know? But at the same time, it kind of reminded me, like, of Long Halloween art, just a little bit.
Okay.
And as the story went on, I found that I wasn't really... Now, it could be a good thing or a bad thing. I wasn't really following... I liked the story. I got lost in the story, and I bypassed the art that I was unsure of.
Did you find that the tone of the story, how it was kind of... I mean, it's Hawkeye, who we all know is... You know, we've seen him in the Avenger movies and all that. But this story is done on a bit of a smaller scale. Inside of... It's almost kind of like Daredevil in Hell's Kitchen. But it's not worldwide. It's not global yet. So because of that, he's not really running around in a costume and fighting off supervillains. It's more of a local story. Did you find that the artwork suited the tone?
It did, and I find that happens a lot. There's a lot of books that I have given a try where, again, I look at the artwork and I'm like, this is not a good idea. But I tend to see that or feel that the artwork does complement the story. It goes hand in hand nicely. So, mm-hmm. like I said, it's either it worked well or the story surpassed the art for me.
Okay.
And it wasn't a problem. I just felt like I was just flipping pages. I was invested in the story.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm happy you enjoyed it because it is a little bit off the beaten path of what you would go for. It's a Marvel book, which mm-hmm. you're always a little bit hesitant to delve into because you're not as familiar with the characters. But Matt Fraction, he's a very well-renowned comic writer these days. A lot of his stuff I don't read because it's just not my taste. It's a little mm-hmm. bit too, lack of a better term, obscene for me. But his stuff that he did for Marvel, I really enjoyed, especially the Hawkeye, and he did some things for Iron Fist, which was really good. And yeah, you do get lost in the story and the character development because it's small scope, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of an independent take on a Marvel book because these are guys who do a lot of creator-owned books. So the way that they did some of the things in the Marvel Now era of Marvel Comics. Remember we did the Ms. Marvel episode? Do you remember how that was also kind of... It didn't have your usual superhero... what's the word? Scope of being like this huge story of big villain.
It just seemed very everyday.
Yeah. Yeah.
And although he's a superhero, it seemed a little bit relatable. You know, there's neighbors.
Yeah.
There's a neighborhood.
Yeah.
They do everyday things. They cook. They have children.
Right.
They have cable.
Pets.
Like, just everyday relatable things.
Right, right.
And it kind of... it was nice to... As much as these stories are for our entertainment and escape... It was kind of nice to see these superheroes just kind of do everyday things. It's not always gloom and doom and the end of the world situation. It's just him saying, look, I'm tired.
Yeah.
I want to watch my TV show. I TiVo'd it and I think there was a part where he told Tony Stark because they watched the same TV show.
Yeah.
I think it's like a dog cop show. And they're like, he's like, no, no, don't tell me. Don't spoil it. I want to see it for myself. Just that kind of, but I find that there, that type of dialogue is also transitioned into the films that Marvel has been making.
Yeah.
So like in the Age of Ultron, you know, when all the Captain America and, Thor and all of them, they're all just sitting around hanging out until obviously something bad happens, but they're kind of just just having a good time,
shooting the breeze,
just doing stuff.
The way this character is portrayed in this particular run of the book, I almost feel like it would make for one of those good Netflix series.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not, it could have a little bit of humor, but also good drama.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but the way they kind of portrayed him in the films, everyone's kind of waiting for him to die now because he's got the family. And, like, they've made him this family man, which is not the way he is in this book. Like, he doesn't have the kids and the house on the farm and all that kind of jazz. So, I much rather prefer this take on the character.
Yeah.
But, whatevs. It's good. Enjoy the comic book. Enjoy the movie version. It's all good. Before we get into our deep Star Wars talk, a couple things have happened in the realm of upcoming comic book movies. There's been a trailer release for Civil War.
Yes.
I never got to ask you about the trailer, what you thought of it. We saw it together.
Mm-hmm.
Give the people your feels for it.
I don't know what to say. It was good.
Are you pumped? Did it get you like, I need to see this movie right now. Like, I can't wait. Because you read Civil War.
I did. That was my first Marvel book. I am pumped to see it. I'm a little sad because I feel like something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
Really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a thought, but I'm excited for it. And I'm also hoping they didn't show any in the trailer. I didn't see. I'm just going to say it. I didn't see Spider-Man in
mm-hmm.
the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Spider-Man plays an integral role in the book.
Right.
So I'm wondering, because now they can have Spider-Man in there, right?
Yes.
They can.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if they're not showing him in the trailers because it's supposed to be a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Or are they not introducing that? And I really hope...
keeping people's anticipation.
I hope so.
I think so. They're playing it smart. They're playing it smart. And I'll explain to you my reason why when we talk about the next subject on the docket. But continue with this.
I'm looking forward to it.
Any specific part of the trailer that just had you like, you know, mouth open, gasping for, oh my goodness, moment? Did you have that?
Well, Bucky. I like Bucky.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I want him to win. And I don't like Tony.
No.
And the fact that they go head-to-head excites me.
Yeah. It's really gonna unfold
mm-hmm.
interestingly. I agree with you. I feel like there's gonna be some...
There's gonna be a major loss.
There's gonna be a major loss. In the comics, it's well known that it was your main character who dies.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a spoiler.
No.
And I don't know if Chris Evans is intending to be in the next phase of Marvel films.
But didn't you say that he hasn't signed on to play anymore?
I don't know if this is his last one or if he's set to be in the next Avengers movie. I don't know. But I know that Sebastian Shaw, who is Bucky, has his contract is like 9 films.
Yeah.
So in the comics, Bucky becomes Captain America for a time. So I don't know what direction they're going in
mm-hmm.
after this movie, but it'll be pretty epic.
Mm-hmm.
The other trailer that was released...
Oh my gosh.
...a couple of days ago... ...from this recording... ...was Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. And you had some jaw-dropping moments... ...when I saw you watch that trailer. What did you think of that one?
I like that... ...although we know... ...because it's a Batman v Superman movie... ...so you already know that these two people are going to be head-to-head... But I liked how in the trailer it kind of sets up also that there's animosity between Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
And Bruce Wayne is rude because then he says that he's had basically bad experiences with freaks.
Freaks dressed in clowns?
Yeah.
Freaks dressed up as clowns, something like that? Yeah. Yeah.
But he gives him a one-over. He looks at him. Mm. And then Clark...
Do you think he knows at that point?
I think... Well, because Bruce Wayne is the best detective in the world.
Apparently, Clark Kent isn't a good reporter. Because how do you not know who Bruce Wayne is? That you're at a place, you say, well, who's that? That bothered me. That really, this is Superman. First of all, Superman is not stupid. Clark Kent is a reporter. Yeah. No, but he's a reporter. Your whole job to be in journalism is to know who people are. Yeah. Especially one of the richest men in the world. It's like saying, who's Bill Gates? Who's George Lucas for, to coincide with this podcast? Come on. He wouldn't know who Bruce Wayne is? That bothered me. So,
the other thing.
Yeah.
That I appreciated about the trailer is that it seems like DC is opening up to possibilities and exploring different avenues of entertainment. They're not shying away from what makes them good storytellers. And now that they're introducing Doomsday,
mm-hmm.
That's a whole other thing that I don't think DC has ventured in up until now.
I think that's really cool that he looks like Doomsday. It's a good twist to reintroduce, if this is how they're going. This is speculation, of course, that Zod is turned into Doomsday.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like that they showed him. I think that was a really bad idea.
It didn't leave the audience...
They basically said this is what the movie's about. Batman and Superman are not sure of each other. They're going to become friends. And they're going to team up with Wonder Woman and fight Doomsday. I'm going to watch Star Wars next week. I have no idea what it's about. And that's great. I've seen the trailer.
That's smart advertising,
Yeah, I think
it's... Publicity. Promotion.
Yeah.
Yeah, but maybe that's just one of the many layers that this movie's about, because the other villain we know is Lex Luthor.
What did you think of his...
I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
I don't like this...
Is he the Riddler?
For me, yeah.
Right?
For me, Lex Luthor has always been... We know that he's a bad guy, but he always presents himself as... a man for the people. He's logical. He's smart. He's...
authoritative.
And he can make you believe what he wants you to believe.
He can run for president.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But he just seems a little bit... I don't know. It just seemed a little child...
Yeah, no, you're right. Zany, childish, kind of... crazy scientist as opposed to industrialist.
Yeah.
Because he could be an industrialist and a scientist.
He reminded me of Edward Nygma.
Yeah, and he looked like him too. Yeah.
So I'm not sure about that, but
I'm excited, but I'm skeptical. And if this doesn't go well, just give them the keys. Say Warner Brothers, we don't know how to do this. We can't compete with Marvel. Because this is it. This is going to be it. And looking at the cast, Aquaman is in this movie at some point. I don't know where he fits in. If it's just a cameo. It's rumored that there's going to be a Barbara Gordon in it. Which is fine if she just makes a quick little... Batman's in it. It's in Gotham at some point. There's going to be some room for... Gotham characters. They're saying that there's going to be rumored Barry Allen is in it. And then possibly... Yeah, so Barbara Gordon, Aquaman, Barry Allen. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like too much is trying to be shoehorned in to catch up to Marvel. And you watch Civil War and you have ideas of what it's about. But you can tell there's still lots that you have no idea where it's going. You don't.
Yeah, but that it could still be assumption. Just because you saw Doomsday doesn't mean... Maybe Doomsday is just like at the end of the movie, and then all of a sudden it's like, how are we going to do this? It's like now it's introducing another movie with them three going to take on Doomsday. You don't know.
You're right, and I hope you're right.
Like, what if that's just the conclusion of, like I said, that film to introduce the sequel of Batman and Superman? Who knows? We don't know. So I don't. I've already was skeptical when I heard Ben Affleck was gonna play Batman.
He's my favorite part of the trailer.
I want to boycott the whole thing.
He's the best. He's so far. He's the best part of it. So, he looks the part. He plays Bruce Wayne well.
I don't want to prejudge the movie. Maybe because I'm biased, but I don't want to prejudge it before I actually get to see it. Because if I think it is very easy for anyone to judge it and come to conclusions about it.
One other character I've just seen here is Carrie Ferris, which I'm not, if I'm understanding it correctly, that is a Green Lantern character.
See, but then I think you're doing this to yourself. Why are you looking it up? Because you're saying, well, they're showing too much and it's spoiling everything. But I think also these same people that feel that way, stay away from the media. Stay away. Like, I think it's hard to do in this world, but don't start looking for stuff. Like, for me personally, I don't like looking at trailers more than one time, because then I feel like, or when they release new trailers over and over, I think they were doing that with, what was it? That movie.
That one. That was a good one.
But they kept, like...
Which one?
They kept announcing, like, a new trailer on this day and another trailer on this day. And, like, oh, this trailer is going to be 5 minutes longer or 2 minutes longer than the other trailer. Like,
was it Star Wars?
No. It wasn't.
Avengers?
No.
Okay. It's some movie that we've all seen. Okay.
Yeah, and it's...
I agree,
and it's like, well, just because it's out there... I know it's difficult, but you don't have to watch. You don't. It's like, you know, World Cup, like a World Cup game. Like, just keep your head down and go home and watch the game. If you don't want spoilers, don't turn on the radio. Don't go on Google or whatever. Like, but just stay away.
But the point of, like, everybody's always watched and enjoyed trailers because it gets you excited. It's you don't ever want to go blindly into a movie and be like, well, I have no idea.
Some do.
No, that's fair. That's fair that you don't want to see extended spoilers, but you want to have a taste of what this movie is,
who's in it. But you just said that you didn't like the fact that they showed this because it already gave away the movie.
But that is a commentary on the people making the trailer, the people making the movie. That's what I'm saying. That's why I compare it. When you look at Star Wars, you've got everything you want to see. You know that there's going to be Jedi. You know that
they're
there's
going to
be...
They're doing it smart.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the way you do it. Yeah. Because everybody's super excited, but nobody's saying, I'm not liking it. I don't like this part. It's upsetting me. No, you're going in there like, it looks and feels like what I had back in the 80s as a child. This is a legitimate Star Wars movie, but I don't know what Luke does. He could be the villain. I don't know what... If Han Solo dies, there's nothing given away. But when you look at...
Yeah, but this being a DC or a movie based on a comic book, that we have an idea what it's based on, Dark Knight Returns, then you already know the outcome. You already know what's going to happen. There's not really... There's obviously a chance of things being slightly different, but you have an idea. So when it comes to comic books and things like that, I think it's hard to go in... not knowing what to expect. With Star Wars, that's George Lucas's brainchild. Like, that, and it's not even his at this point.
I know, but I still think it's a poor... I think they gave away too much of the movie. Still think they failed in that regard.
And that's okay to have that opinion. I don't want to overthink it, because I think it'll just... I hope it's a good one. I just hope it's good.
I hope so, too. I really do. Okay, moving along, let's get into our subject at hand. Star Wars. Empire Strikes Back, Episode 5.
Yeah.
Episode 5. Very few movies in movie-making history ever surpass the movie that came before. right, as a sequel, as a part two. Can you think of any movies that are sequels to a big franchise that are better than its predecessor?
That are better.
Or just as good, even.
That are better?
I can think of maybe...
I would say Terminator 2.
Okay, that's a good pull. That's a good pull.
I don't like the rest of them. No. I like T2.
Yeah, yeah.
I like Indiana Jones.
Temple of Doom you like better than Raiders of the Lost Ark?
No, but as it, like, the trilogy, like, I, no, I like the last one.
That's your favorite. That's okay. My favorite. Yes.
What other stuff is there?
I can think of a couple on one hand. Stuff that kind of is equal to or surpasses the original. I could say Godfather 2.
Yes.
You can say maybe better than the first one. The first one's amazing.
Yeah. Rocky?
No, I don't think it's necessarily better. I might like it the most. Right. But I don't think it's better than the first one.
So what else?
Captain America, Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Right? Okay, I agree with
Fantastic.
You.
Fantastic. Dark Knight. You can argue it's better than Batman Begins. That.
See, I feel like they're different from each other.
They are, but as far as a sequel living up to the hype and being in the minds of people as that movie is a superior film. It's there. Dark Knight is there. I had another one. I thought of Captain America, Godfather, The Dark Knight. I had another one on the tip of my tongue, I can't remember. But easily, the one that comes to everybody's mind is Empire Strikes Back. I think, for myself personally, this movie is possibly one of the best films of all time, but it's the backbone of the entire Star Wars universe. Without this movie, this franchise wouldn't be what it is today. My opinion. What do you think of Empire Strikes Back?
I could, when I was listening to your conversation with our wild card, I remember feeling the same way that Return of the Jedi growing up was my favorite. Mm-hmm. I liked the scenery. I loved the Ewoks. It was, as a kid, I appreciated it, but I absolutely 100% agree with him that as an adult, you're right. Empire Strikes Back surpasses that on a lot of levels.
Would you agree with my opinion that the mythology of Star Wars is built on the back of Empire Strikes Back? This is where it expands. This is where doors open up to...
I think so, because there's character development. Luke is becoming a Jedi or training to be one. Han Solo is now a little nicer to people.
Got more redeeming qualities.
Right?
Yeah.
Even his relationship with Leia has blossomed a little bit. You know, Darth Vader finds out that Luke is his son.
And vice versa.
And Luke, for sure. So I think there's a lot of character development within this
even thing. The introduction of characters such as, you know, Lando.
Yoda.
You hit the nail on the head. I was going to say Yoda. That there opens the door for so much possibility in any type of iteration of the Star Wars universe.
Mm-hmm.
To know that this force that they speak about in the first movie isn't just some... something they reference to be like, okay, here's the thing that you would use to get that shot off.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that really exists in this universe to be used and to really conquer this empire. But you hear about the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's explored. You hear about... You start seeing a little bit of Luke's...
I even think this is the first time you do see the Emperor. You've heard of him in the first one.
Yes.
But you think that Darth Vader is the head honcho, but there's actually someone even more powerful than him.
Yes. You kind of see the chain of command.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's true. Before we continue, I think because we did it in the last episode, I'm going to read a quick synopsis of what The Empire Strikes Back is for anybody who doesn't know.
Where have you been? You don't know what's going on?
It's true. It's true. Because this is one of those films as a franchise, but this movie in particular that has really gone deep into our subconscious in pop culture. Like, we know, people know things about this movie, even if you've never seen
it. Yeah, even if you don't know, you know.
You know the premise. So,
go for it.
Let's just go quick synopsis. This is, again, from Wikipedia. Easiest place to find it. This film is set 3 years after Star Wars: A New Hope. The Galactic Empire, under the leadership of the villainous Darth Vader and Emperor Palpatine, is in pursuit of Luke Skywalker and the rest of the Rebel Alliance. While Vader chases a small band of Luke's friends, Han Solo, Princess Leia, Organa, and others across the galaxy, Luke studies the Force under Jedi Master Yoda. When Vader captures Luke's friends, Luke must decide whether to complete his training and become a full Jedi Knight, or to confront Vader and save them. Okay, so what do you like more about this film out of all of the six that were made? What is it? What are some of the things about this one that put it on top for you?
Well, this is just my opinion.
Yeah.
But I think this movie, I think R2-D2 is the real hero in this whole thing. Like, he really is. Okay. And he is in all of the movies. He's so self-sufficient. He gets the job. So, in episode 4, he was told to go find Obi-Wan because something was going on. And this guy made it through desert, sand people, getting traded by things, and he made it. And then in this one, he goes to bat with, he goes to take Luke to get trained.
Yeah.
And, like, he's, like, fighting with him in the air and
training with him?
Yeah.
You're so funny.
Like,
So R2-D2 is the reason one that, Empire Strikes Back.
He gets Leia and Chewie and all of them out of there when they were in this city in the clouds, when they were captured by Darth Vader, man. They were there with Darth Vader, had them in a room and said, I'm going to kill you all. And torturing Han Solo and, you know, C-3PO is in pieces. And who gets them out? C-3PO.
R2-D2,
I'm sorry.
C-3PO is in a couple of pieces at that point.
Yeah, that's what I said. But R2-D2 comes to the rescue.
Yeah.
And he gets the ship. He fixes the hyperdrive. And he gets them out of there.
There's a couple times in this tirade right now that you went on about how great R2-D2 is that I thought you were going to say something completely inappropriate. But I'm happy you didn't. You kept it clean. You kept it
good, yeah.
Yeah, that was funny.
I really do believe
so
that he is the real hero behind this.
So my question, before I get into who's your favorite character, because that's clear who your favorite character is, is R2-D2 and his rescuing of all his friends and partners, what makes this movie your favorite? The way he comes through?
But he does that in all the movies.
Yeah, he does. So
your question is, what is it about this movie?
Yes.
Okay.
You really wanted to come here talking about R2-D2. That's what this was all about. The guy who just beeps.
Like I said, I think it's character development.
Okay.
I think that's the main thing. I think Darth Vader is like toe-to-toe with the Joker, being the best villains ever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Yeah.
Like, his presence, he has his own song. And
yeah.
There's something about his breathing, about his cape, and there's no facial expression.
Incredible.
With this man.
Yeah.
But you know when
you
he's...
feel it.
You know when he's pissed. Like, you know when he's... But even still, I found, I'm sorry if I'm changing subjects a bit, but as bad as he is, and there, again, there's no facial expression because he's wearing a helmet and a mask, I felt watching this movie that he wasn't exactly what he was portrayed as in the first one. And I mean that by, although he was the bad guy, I don't think he ever really wanted to be.
No.
Because when the Emperor reveals to him that this young menace, like this guy that's ruining their plans, is his offspring, his Darth Vader's reaction was like, that can't be. And he's like, you'll know. Search it for it yourself and you'll know that I'm telling you the truth. And when he goes and he tries to find Luke and reveals himself as his father, he doesn't say, I want to just take you out.
Yeah.
He says, you're supposed to take out the Emperor. Do it so you and I can rule the galaxy together.
Mm-hmm.
Or at that time when he said, when the Emperor said, this is your son and he's causing me a mess. And Vader's immediate response wasn't, yes, my lord, I'm going to kill him. It was like, no, what if we make him our ally? I felt like his fatherly instincts kicked in mm-hmm. to kind of protect him.
But with what you're saying, all of that is true. But what's beautiful about this movie is that while you're watching it, and my one regret in regards to Star Wars is I didn't get to see it without knowing all of these little things, that Darth Vader's the dad. Like, I never got to experience that reveal. It's the greatest reveal of all time. My only regret personally with this film franchise is that I wasn't alive to watch it the first time in the theater to get that initial reaction that Darth Vader is the father.
That's not a regret. That was kind of out of your control.
It's not a regret. Poor choice of words. Not a regret, but my one thing that I wish I could have experienced out of any movie I've ever seen is it would have been being a kid or even an adult in that moment to see that. Because nothing like that, there's nothing that comes close to that. And the movie ends on a cliffhanger, which wasn't very common. Maybe it was completely uncommon to the point where we were watching the special features.
Credits.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just threw a word out there.
In regards to the reveal, though, the actors didn't even know, making the movie, that Darth Vader was the father. They had told Mark Hamill, I think, after the fact. Because in the script, it said that Obi-Wan killed your father. That's what the actor
That's playing. What everybody knew what yeah. was going to be said. What but was going to be said. They pulled him aside and said, actually, he's going to say this. And even when it was recorded, because the actor that played Darth Vader under the suit was not the person that did the... It wasn't James Earl Jones.
No.
So James Earl Jones did a recording separately. And then when he got the script, he was like, huh?
Yeah. He was like, is he lying?
Yeah.
And to your point about the characterization of Darth Vader, what you were saying before, you have to give a ton of credit to James Earl Jones and how he delivered the voice. Because I don't think the menace, the villainy of Darth Vader, even those little human moments that you described of how he spoke to Luke,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it would have ever been as powerful or as, what's the word, menacing. Wouldn't have had that impact if James Earl Jones didn't do that voice. So even though he wasn't in the suit acting it out,
mm-hmm.
you have to give him a lot of credit for his voice acting in this movie. Because yeah. I think it really saves the day. Remember when we saw the original footage cut?
Yeah.
It was just like, oh boy. If that was the voice that they would have went with, this movie would not have worked. And you know, you think of it, it's all those little things that you don't pay attention to or think are a big deal because it's just so common. How much of a difference it really made. But what you were saying before was all of those facets about Darth Vader and how he tried to maneuver things with Luke, with the Emperor.
Well, I even noticed that when closer to the end of this movie, I'm not moving ahead, I'm just speaking on a specific scene, when they're going to put Han Solo in the carbon box there. And Chewie starts getting on the defense, and he's getting everyone away from Han, and Boba Fett was just about to shoot, I guess, Chewie or Han or someone, because there was this chaos happening, and I never noticed it until I saw it. Darth Vader puts his hand on Boba Fett's gun and pulls it down. Like, he's like, don't. Like, he stops him from hurting these group of people. And again, I wonder if, like, where did that come from? Like, is it because he just wants to put Han in the box? Is it because he has his own ulterior motives? Is it because he doesn't want his daughter to get hurt? Or is it because he knows that this would hurt Luke? Like, I don't know. Like, where did that come from where he came to the defense of these people that were being victimized? When he was actually the one causing it, and he made this whole thing happen, but it's almost like, if they are hurt, I'm going to do it, but no one else is allowed to do it.
Yeah, I want them alive.
Yeah.
He kept saying, I want them alive.
He want them alive, yeah.
And what's, going back to what you were saying before about Darth Vader and his progression as a character, you don't know, watching, if you're watching this for the first time, you don't know that Luke is his son. Mm-mm. We know it now. Right. But we didn't know you weren't supposed to know. So all of those things would have had such a huge impact on, you know, watching it again. Going back and watching it, like, oh wow, that's what it, like, they took this point that Obi-Wan was saying about Anakin killing or Darth Vader being killed by Anakin and it means something completely different, but he wasn't lying. Yeah. Like, all of these things suddenly have so much more weight.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying, imagine watching that for the first time, not expecting, not knowing.
But at some point, you do watch it for the first time, and you still have that experience. You just don't have it with the masses.
You do, but so much to, like, that line, no, I am your father. Like, that is such a, you know, it's used in so many different jokes, and it's referenced all the time, that it's not a surprise anymore, because it was such a big deal. And I think, when we watch movies now, because of what Empire Strikes Back had kind of introduced to the world as far as storytelling and surprises and cliffhangers, we're always expecting, like, no, there's something more. Like, Nick Fury's not dead. You know, he's going to come back. He's going to be revealed again. Or, I don't know, there's going to be more to the, like we were saying, Batman v Superman. That's not the ending. There's going to be something we don't know is going to happen. Because of the way that they set up this movie, I don't think anything compares to that. Would you agree that this is the one that kind of
started it all? Yeah. Like I said, when I just randomly threw the word credits in there.
Yeah. Yeah, tell them about the credits. That's a big deal, actually.
So apparently George Lucas was kind of going against the vine a little bit. Grain. Where'd the vine come from? And he did a lot of unconventional things, one of which was not giving credit or doing the credits at the beginning of a film. It just went straight into Star Wars, and then you just see that going, and then the synopsis of what has occurred or what's going to happen, and whatever, that long yellow path of greatness. You know, the yellow brick road in the galaxy there. And then straight into the movie. And apparently, I guess it was the Directors Guild or something, they punished him and anyone who was involved by fining them. I forget how many millions of dollars.
Quarter of a million.
Yeah. Because he didn't do what Hollywood wanted him to do or what he was supposed to do. And
doesn't seem like a big deal, but back then, you didn't watch a movie without credits at the beginning.
And now, just like all the things that he used to make the movie, the technology behind Star Wars and every, like, all of that has such an effect on filmmaking now. Even the simple fact that we don't get credits in the beginning anymore. That doesn't happen.
Trailblazer. Really was.
It started this whole new phenomenon.
Yeah, it's true. And thankfully, because we all resonate with Star Wars to this day, and people, I don't think, realize that even if they're not fans of Star Wars or they don't think it's their thing, they're enjoying movies because of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point.
They're storytelling elements, things that people do in movies that they can thank Star Wars and George Lucas for having introduced that.
Mm-hmm.
And the themes, like me, I asked our wild card last episode, what do you think it is about Star Wars that makes it still, it transcends generations for people to still like it today? For you, what do you think it is that makes it still a viable movie, something that people can still, young and old, like just as much as they did 30, 40 years ago? What makes it last, do you think?
I think it's just good storytelling.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can put my finger on anything specific, but I think it does cater to groups of people, not one particular. You know, it appeals to children. It appeals to people that are, you know, into sci-fi. There's a family
dynamic
in there. There's a love story. There's action.
And subtle. The love story's subtle.
Very
it's not
subtle.
Like,
no, it's not in your face.
No.
Even when she tells him he loves him, he's like, I know.
Great, great moment.
It
love
wasn't
that line.
Like, I love you too. Although that was the original script.
Yeah.
Of
it
them.
Didn't work. Yeah.
Of them finally coming to that realization that they have these feelings for each other. It just wasn't working.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the director at that point just told Harrison Ford, just say whatever comes natural to you and we'll take it. Because enough is enough. It's been like 6 takes already. We can't get it right. You're not selling it to me. Just do it. And so when she says, I love you, and he's like, I know.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my gosh, that's what he would say.
Yeah. This movie, I said it to you with Back to the Future. And with our wild card, talking about the classic lines. This
mm-hmm.
movie even has more.
Oh, yeah.
This movie has so... Almost every line in this movie is a quotable.
Which are your favorite?
Oh, boy. Starting right from the beginning, I love... I like the humor in this movie. There's a good amount of humor that doesn't make it silly, but it's just the right natural dialogue between people that make it funny. I love when Leia leans into Han Solo and calls him the Nerf Herder. And she's got so much that she wants to say to him because she's so disgusted by him. He's like...
Scruffy looking.
Yeah, scruffy looking Nerf Herder. Who's scruffy looking? And then Chewbacca's laughing at him.
Yeah.
Laugh it up, Buzzball. Like, right from that point of the movie, it's just so many lines stick with you. That on subsequent watches, you just, I don't know, it just makes you happy hearing them again.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's the classic Yoda, there is no try, you do or do not.
Mm-hmm. It's do or do not, there is no try.
Do it in a Yoda voice.
Do or do not. There is no try.
What was that?
I was my Yoda.
That was your Yoda. You sound like you needed a cough lozenge. Okay.
Anything else? Any other lines?
Oh, man. Any other lines? You can go on. We could do a whole episode, 40 minutes of just doing the dialogue.
Well, just like you said, I think the reveal is the biggest thing.
Oh.
I am your father. However, though, when they go at it with the lightsabers.
Yeah. Yeah, there's tons of lines.
I love when Vader says, because he thinks he got him.
Yeah.
And he's shutting the door to the carbon pot there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Luke shoots out.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he sees that he's out and about, he says, impressive. Most impressive. Like, that I like.
There's all kinds of different stuff that, even in that, Obi-Wan has taught you well.
Mm.
You underestimate the power of the dark side. Or, when Luke is hanging after he's given him the reveal, And he says, it is your destiny. That whole interchange.
Yeah. There's a lot.
There's too much. You could go on and on forever with this. When he meets Yoda. Stuff that he says to his admirals after he kills one. Like, it's just endless, the stuff he says. Or even something as silly as Han Solo, Minox, chewing on the power cables. Like, stuff that you wouldn't even think about.
Speaking of Minox.
Okay.
They freak me out.
Why?
I think out of all of those crazy aliens, the Minox were the scariest to me. They were like those bat flying things when they were in the cave trying to hide from the military there.
Okay.
And they went into an asteroid field.
Yeah.
And they landed on a rock and they found a cave. It turned out that they were in the belly of
a beast.
Of something.
Yeah.
But there was these bat things flying all over the place. Ooh. I don't like those.
Minox.
Yeah.
Yeah,
see, and it also had horror in it.
It was not horror.
No, those things are terrible. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. This movie, this whole thing has something for everybody. Whether you think that it's not your thing, you'd be surprised. You'd find an element in it that would be satisfying.
I find this one more than New Hope would have more of an appeal to a wider audience, I think. Because of the storytelling elements. Because of the relationship building. Because if you put this movie in, you know, a fantasy world, medieval time type of thing, if you put it in a Western setting, it would still appeal because of what you said before, what the story is.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a good story, it doesn't matter where it takes place. It's great. One of the things that I really didn't appreciate or knew about before, this film was an independent film. People know Star Wars today as being this huge conglomerate belonging to Disney, you know, the franchise having all of these toys and merchandise. But it's incredible to think that George Lucas, especially this movie, he didn't go the corporate route, the studio route. He completely went against the grain or the vine, as you said, and put up his own money to make it, which was a horrible idea for anybody in those days to do. And to think of how it paid off, like, what a gamble he took.
Mm-hmm.
You would never think of a movie like this to be independent. It's unthinkable. And like you said before, the technology that he used, the models that they had to build, it definitely, from the first movie, you definitely see an improvement. It was worth waiting the 3 years between the films.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the improvement of it. But the labor of love that these guys put into it, we're still enjoying it.
Yeah, and I think,
to this day, thankfully.
After seeing what was put in to make this movie, I think I appreciate it even more.
Yeah. You take it for granted because you just watch it. And you may not have known at the time what it was that was being done, but there was nothing like this.
Mm-hmm.
Up to that point. The ILM, the Industrial Light and Magic, like, I used to see that at the credits of so many movies after the fact, not knowing that it was made specifically to cater to what they wanted to do in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it blows my mind when I think about it. Who's your favorite character? Oh, well, your favorite character is R2-D2. Who's your favorite character that has a heartbeat?
Okay, well, I'm going to say C-3PO. And I'm going to tell you why.
Tell me why.
He may not have a heartbeat.
Okay.
But I find that although he is a robot who is, you know, this human relations translation.
Cyborg.
He has a lot of emotion.
Yeah.
I find him too.
He says, ow. Bump his head and he complains for pain.
Like, but in all but seriously though, like he's not just this mindless thing that is programmed to do what he's told to do. He when Luke goes missing in the beginning of this movie, where he's out in the snowstorm and Han Solo goes out to find him, and he kind of consoles Leia and saying, well, he does it in his robot way and saying, well, you know, the odds of him doing this and that is this and this to one.
Yeah.
But, you know, we could be wrong.
Yeah.
I hope Master Luke makes it okay. Like, he still feels for, yeah. Again, he's always very with the statistics, but he's always rooting for them to win. He always wants people to be safe. He has fear. He's very nervous. He gets frustrated with...
Very neurotic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, although he may not have a heartbeat, I find that he does carry a lot of...
He's got a lot of heart.
He does have a lot of heart.
Yeah. I like that.
But someone who actually has a heartbeat...
I know what you're going to say. You want me to say it? Chewbacca.
He's such a soldier, man. He's so good. Yeah, man. Like, and he's faithful. He's just so faithful.
Thus far, you've put three people before the humans.
But you know what? Then that's also reciprocated.
I find your lack of faith disturbing in people. No, I'm just kidding.
But, no, that's me.
No, Chewbacca's awesome. I mean, again, another guy. R2-D2, Chewbacca. No words are uttered. Just noises. They're your guys. I get it. One of the things that I really like about Empire Strikes Back, another one of the things is that the characters expand and develop, but I also like that the settings of the movie, it changes. You know, you got the Hoth, the ice planet.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to the Dagobah system, which is swampy.
Right.
And you go to
City
in the Clouds. Like, you really get to see...
A bigger scope.
Yeah. Which is one of my favorite things about this movie, because you feel like you're moving and going different places with the characters.
You're actually seeing the galaxy that these people are fighting for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all of the movies go somewhere different, but I feel like this one, they're all so different.
Mm-hmm.
And you encounter, you know, different species, different settings, and I don't know, I think that's one of the appeals to this. You really get to see the scope of this saga, how big, grand scale it actually can be.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that aspect of it myself. Which is your favorite planet, setting? You can see in all of the trilogies, which one
do you like the best? In Return of the Jedi, I love the Ewok country.
Endor?
It's very foresty and green and just, you know, these tree houses, and they're swinging from one tree. It's fun.
Yeah.
But it was always very lush. It seemed very peaceful.
Yeah.
And they were a peaceful race, right? In this one, I liked City in the Clouds. I love the scenery, the pink and the oranges in the sky, and how everything looked very clean and respectable, organized.
Alive.
Very alive. Fresh.
Yeah.
It looked nice.
Mm.
Yeah.
So Endor. On Empire Strikes Back, how cold do you get watching them on Hoth?
Oh my, I can't. No.
And when they filmed it there too, they said how horrible
the conditions were.
Like, it was the worst winter
in 50 years or something like that.
Yeah, in Norway or something like that.
Yeah.
One thing I forgot to mention at the top of the show was that the director was not George Lucas for this one.
No.
It was Irvin Kershner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the reasons this movie is as good as it is. Not to say that George Lucas isn't a good director, but one of the things that the cast did say about his directing was that it wasn't very... when he would want them to redo something, he wouldn't be specific of what he was looking for. It was more intense, faster.
Mm-hmm.
more intense, faster.
Mm-hmm.
So the communication that he would have with his cast members.
You're talking about George Lucas originally.
Yes.
He wanted intense and faster.
Yeah.
It wasn't clear what he was looking for.
Yeah. So I don't think he paid as much attention to the character development that the actors would portray on the screen. Whereas in this one, I do see a big difference.
But I think too, though, when the first movie was being done, no one knew what he was doing. Not even the actors were aware of, like, they even questioned. They're like, what? We're walking into this bar thing where people have, like, aliens and distorted faces, and Leia's walking around with these buns around her ear. Like, nobody appreciated or understood where he was going with it. And I think that made it harder for people to deliver what he was trying to look for. So only he knew when he had what he wanted, but nobody right. else did. However, now coming into a second movie, everyone knows their role. They know the history of their characters and the people that they're living with.
And the impact it's had on society to know how...
No, but put that aside. Like, now you and I, we have a flow.
Okay.
I know you're Luke Skywalker. I know you are an integral person in this film. So, and I know that this is what you're doing. I know who I am, and I know that this is the attitude that I carry. I have a chip on my shoulder because of what... You know what I mean? Now you know the person that you're playing. And I think that also made it a little bit easier for whoever took up the mantle, because you already have these players that already know what they need to do.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's like initially possibly putting a soccer team together. But then once you start playing with each other, you know who's the striker, you know who's defenseman, you know who can, you know you can pass the ball to this guy and he'll take it. He'll take it there. He's yeah. your striker. So there's a dynamic that was already built.
So you think going back into their roles, they already knew what they had to do, which lent to them.
It's quite possible. I mean,
I agree with you with what you're saying, because when you know your character, I think it helps you get right back into their.
It's like with Han Solo when Leia expressed her love for him to respond like that. Harrison Ford said that he said what he said because they built this character having this kind of attitude, like this is what he would say.
Right.
So he was familiar with who he was playing.
Right.
They knew that Han Solo wasn't the mushy type. He wouldn't be like, I love you too. So when he just pulled it out of a hat and the director knew the character, Harrison Ford knew the character, and so they both were in agreement that this was going to work.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard to do that the first time around, because especially when you're the only one that has faith in it and nobody and everyone else is questioning you along the way.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think based upon his directing track record, though, because he's the one who did the episodes 1, 2, and 3. And sometimes people deliver lines that a good director would say, no. That's not good.
Who did 1, 2, and 3?
George Lucas, episode 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that is always criticized for is not so much the story, but the way lines are delivered
mm-hmm.
and how hammy they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as much as in this movie they still are, like, the script is what it is and these characters say what they say, but you really do feel, like, for instance, your example about Han saying that to Leia. Perhaps if it was Lucas, they probably wouldn't have redone it. The director had a better idea of the relationships between, because the movies that he had done previously weren't special effects sci-fi movies. They were more movies about characterization.
Mm-hmm.
So because this movie was built a lot on that and the story progresses a lot on that, along with the special effects and all of the different fight scenes, because he understood those things, it comes across on the screen. And I just, knowing that going into it, I paid a little bit more attention to the interplay and the way these characters now interacted with each other. I felt it was a little bit more smoother.
Mm-hmm.
But mean everything. Every George Lucas picked the guy.
Yeah. Right?
He knew how, like you said, he had a vision of what he wanted it to be. He stuck to his guns. He never budged on titles. Even going back, one thing I wanted to ask you was, a lot of people are upset or hate the fact that he went back and tweaked a couple of things and shined it up or added a person
mm-hmm.
at the end of Return of the Jedi who wasn't originally there in the celebration scene.
Mm-hmm.
Do those type of things bother you to see that it's touched up? Do you like it more in its original form?
I do.
Even the special effects?
I do.
So you...
Because I feel like there was a consistency in the film. And when you see these extra stuff, I feel like, I don't know. It's not a terrible thing, but I don't think it needed it.
I like.
Like, if it ain't broke, don't fix.
And I think that's a good point. In his mind, he said that for him it was broken because he didn't do it the way he wanted it. So him going back to fix it is like, this is how I envisioned it in my head. This is what I wanted to do there. But because I couldn't, I had to leave it out at the time. Now that I can, he put it back to the way he wanted. So in that regard, I'm like, if this is how he wants it, this is his creation. Who am I to tell him, no, don't do it?
No, the only thing I can tell him no to is putting friggin' Anakin, when he's a little punk, long-haired, tired-looking nerve herder, at the end of Return of the Jedi. Like, what is he doing there?
Yeah,
no, the father should have been, like, I think, like, adding different scenes and seeing the galaxy celebrate and, you know, the celebratory scene at the end of it. All the firecrackers and all that. That's fine, beautiful, great, that's great. But I don't like that they took the scene in which Obi-Wan and Yoda and the father, Anakin Skywalker, when they're all in their little hologram
form
appearance,
yeah,
and Luke sees them,
yeah,
and they're all there together as these honorable Jedis.
Right.
I liked the original.
I agree.
I don't like that they put Anakin there. And if you're going to make Anakin young, so why does Obi-Wan look the same? Why does Yoda look the same?
I think the main reason is because at that point, in his mind, possibly, and this is me just speculating again, these are who people have now. Like, when you think of Anakin Skywalker, you think of Hayden Christensen, who played him in two movies. You think of, that's your last vision. You're very familiar with him at that point, yeah, looking that way. Obi-Wan, people remember Alec Guinness, like, being there. But I agree with you. I don't know why.
That did not have to be altered, and
I agree. I don't think
the ending for that reason.
I agree with you on that one. I wish they would have kept that the same. But the other stuff, I don't know the difference, unfortunately. Or I could say fortunately. For me, I just see it, and from when it was remastered, when he remastered the trilogy and re-released it, that's kind of the Star Wars I know. So I don't know if that makes me not an original or not able to appreciate what the original vision was, but I don't mind it so much. But what you just said about old Anakin being there, I would prefer that as well.
Yeah.
I never
Because Darth Vader, well, Anakin, because really, I know Luke had everything to do with it, but so did Anakin. He's the one that picked up the Emperor and dropped him over the ledge. Like, he killed the Emperor. So he died a Jedi, and he died in that state. And he died seeing Luke with his own eyes. You know what I mean? And I don't know, And it's really upsetting to me. I don't like it.
Yeah. You don't like those trilogies.
No, no.
The first one. The original, the prequels.
I don't want to discuss them at all.
You don't think there's any redeeming qualities to them? You don't even think the story is good? No. She's shaking her head, folks. That's how adamant she is. She didn't want to talk about it.
No, I just... I mean, I know we have them, but I don't have any desire... Like, to me, those prequels don't really exist in the universe.
Wow.
And I know it's a very... It's a bold statement to make, but personally, I don't like them. And I know George Lucas did them, and he had a vision, and it's his baby, and he could do what he wants, but... I think it went a little bit beyond. I think he got too excited with what he now had at his disposal and just took it a little further than what I could appreciate.
I like that they exist. There's certain aspects of them that I don't like as much. But I like that you get to see, you know, what the Jedi Council was like. You get to see that aspect of it, just how much of a presence they had. Those things that you just kind of hear about, or Yoda talks about, that you don't really see.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it has as much replay value for me.
No.
Because you know where the story's going.
I think that's the thing. You're right. There is no replay value.
You know that he becomes...
Like, yeah, I know, but okay, fine.
Yeah.
But the original three have more of an impact, I think. I think that's what it is.
Yeah. I never got to ask you this before, and I wanted to, but before I forget, what's your original memory of Star Wars? How early do you remember it? What resonated with you as a kid?
I remember every year we would have a Star Wars trilogy marathon.
How old do you remember? Like your earliest memory?
I can't exactly say. I wish I could. I do know, though, that it was introduced to me by my older sibling.
Okay.
And she was born in 77.
Okay.
So that's when the first Star Wars came out. So by the time the other two, I guess there was already some kind of, like, she must have experienced the first time the Return of the Jedi came out. Like, yeah. They must have been around that. And I know my parents watched it too, and I remember my dad taking the movies and putting them all on one VHS.
Cool.
So it was, he dubbed it.
Yeah, we all did. And that was what we had to do back then.
So we would just watch it one over. But it wasn't something that we would watch all the time. As much as we liked it, it wasn't like...
It was a special event.
It was a special event. It wasn't an all the time, everyday occurrence kind of situation. It was just like, we're going to do the Star Wars? Okay. So we would get the... We would move furniture out in the living room, take that table in the middle, push it aside. We would get our blankets and our pillows, and we would set up kind of like a tent kind of thing, and we would get, like, food.
That's awesome.
And just set up and just sit there for hours on end watching this movie.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like I said, I didn't have it until a little bit later, but I kind of have that... somewhat of that nostalgic memory with my little brother, him being very little, but that being the first, not adult, but older thing that kind of got his attention.
Mm.
So that kind of, what you described, that very sentimental feeling towards
mm-hmm.
it, mm-hmm. I kind of have that with him, which is kind of cool, but that sounds like a ton of fun, making that like an event. Because, you know, that's, I think, what makes everybody love it, is that feeling of being young, being a kid, escaping the music, hearing the music gets you emotional,
mm-hmm.
because so many memories come back to when you watched it, or the first time when the story really gets you, like all of those things. When you, like, I don't know about you, but when I see the trailer, I get a little lump in my throat. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I get the little lump in my throat because it's giving me the feeling of what I had.
I remember when I first saw the trailer in the theater, we went to go see, I think, Age of Ultron it was?
I think
it was Age of Ultron.
I think it was Age of Ultron.
And yeah. They showed that trailer.
Yeah.
And I couldn't I couldn't help myself. Right. I just started clapping and cheering, and I think the rest of the theater also started, like, they were laughing, and then all of a sudden, like, heck yeah! And everyone else started clapping too. Cause
you did start the clapping.
And when Han says, "Chewie, we're home," I'm like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's exciting, and I do like the fact that although the new one is being directed by a completely different person, and George Lucas has, I guess, nothing to really do with it, it's such an impactful trilogy that I guess the score is the same. They are bringing a lot of the original characters back, like Harrison Ford is there. I think even Carrie Fisher is in it. I'm assuming
Mark Hamill's
going to be in it. Yeah. You know, although he's gone, Darth Vader's helmet is in it. Like, there's such...
The presence is there.
Yeah, for sure. So,
do you think, knowing the history of Star Wars, that you're in for a surprise, right? Because the way this is going, it looks like it's really leaning heavily on the original mythology and feeling. Do you think that Luke may be a villain? Do you think they might do something like that? Or will it be too telegraphed that the audience is like... I think it would just be too upsetting to the audience. But what do you think?
I think that would be very upsetting because this is not just a trilogy of... It's not just a trilogy. It's years of accepting and knowing this story. This is almost 40 years of having this story, having this identity. And for you to then taint it, I think that would be a bad move. That being said, I hope nobody dies.
Hey, Harrison Ford has been asking for them to kill his character for a long time.
I didn't know that. Yeah. He didn't want... Everyone else was signed on to do Jedi. He was the only one that didn't. And he was kind of like, just get rid of him. Like, he's not doing anything. He doesn't have a family. He doesn't have any responsibilities. He has no... Like, who cares? Like, just kill him off already. But George Lucas wouldn't let him go. I'm glad he didn't. But now, maybe JJ says, no, you're done.
you want to die that bad?
Like, I don't know. I think it would be a terrible, terrible thing.
Well, you got to figure. He was ready to go years ago.
Yeah, I know.
Right? And now he's in his 70s, nearly 80 years old, Harrison Ford, right? So if they did end up sacrificing him at this point in time, it wouldn't be like, oh, now what are we going to do? He can't be Han Solo forever.
Yeah, he can.
I know, we'd want him to, right? If they did a prequel of Han Solo, because I think they're going to be telling prequel stories before The New Hope, who would you get to play a young Han Solo?
Oh, a young Han Solo, what a good question. I think... Look-wise, maybe? Thor's brother, the Hemsworth, the Hunger Games guy. What's his name?
Liam Hemsworth.
No, what's his name, though?
Gale.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, that could work. That could work. It's tough. I think it's like choosing a new Indiana Jones. Han Solo, Indiana Jones... Who else could do it?
I don't like my answer, but I feel like that could possibly work. I don't know.
How about Arrow? Stephen Amell?
No.
I know. I don't think so either.
He's too recognizable, I think, in a way. But the Hemsworth, not so much. Like, I think he's famous, but not...
I don't know. I don't think I would even touch it at this... You know what? He's on this list. Of people who could possibly do it.
He's
on the list, so it's not a bad pick. He could, I mean...
Who else is on that list?
Buddy from Arrow, the one who plays Arsenal.
His cousin?
Not his cousin. The Red Arrow. Arsenal.
That young kid?
Yeah.
The one that always looks like he has to pee? No. No. Who else is on this list?
The one from Maze Runner. Other unknowns, people I don't know.
Yeah, it has to be an unknown or a face that is not as recognizable.
Yeah.
Which I think that was a very smart thing that George Lucas did, because when he first did this whole Star Wars thing, he did want unknowns to play the roles of these characters.
And it was a good idea. It was, because they take...
Harrison Ford wasn't supposed to be there. He wasn't supposed to, because I think at that time he was already kind of starting. He was in American Graffiti.
Well, he didn't want to put him in Indiana Jones because he's like, I already used him for American Graffiti and Han Solo. I didn't want people to just think of him as my guy.
Yeah.
But thankfully, he picked that guy every time because film icon.
Just worked.
Yeah, just worked. I think we're through. This is a little bit longer episode, but it was a lot of fun because we got a lot to say about this movie. It's one of the greats. Coming up, we'll do the Return of the Jedi, and then we'll have The Force Awakens. This is a Star Wars month.
Oh my God.
And I don't know if you want, but maybe we can even talk about the comic books because I think you would like them.
Comic books of what?
Star Wars.
I don't do that.
You don't do that?
I don't do that. I just...
You just watch the movie.
I use my eyes to just go that way.
You're such a dork. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Stay tuned for the rest of our Star Wars
coverage. Unless Batman's in it.
Batman's in a Ninja Turtle comic.
That's what I'm saying, so you never
know. Stop it. That would completely ruin Star Wars if Batman was in it. I don't care what you say.
Who knows? What is the bad ship called again?
Death Star?
What if this Death Star is going by the
Gotham?
No, by the Watchtower. And then Batman's like doing his but he's like, uh-oh. Well, he would never say uh-oh.
Oh my? Oh my, what's this? Thank you everybody for listening. Give us your input. Email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Follow us on Instagram as well. Or you can go to our website, caveofsolitude.com, and leave us a message on our board. Tell us what you think. Tell us if we got anything incorrect about Star Wars. Educate us if you want to.
Or you can tell us how much you love us.
Leave us an iTunes review. Thank you, Daph J. Leave us an iTunes review. It does help get the show more popular, get the word spread about it. And also visit Cyber City Comics if you're looking for Star Wars comics that are out right now. They are great. I highly recommend that you check them out. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you soon.